Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Reflecting on why you think the way you do about leadership, not necessarily applied to that organization. That's important to actually write down because thoughts are crystallized through conversation and writing.
Welcome to the Warrior You podcast, proudly presented by Hindsight Leadership and Resilience. The Warrior You podcast delves deep into the topics of leadership, resilience, and human optimization. Our mission statement is simple. You're the mission. A massive shout out to our main sponsor, gym equipment specialist Aussie Strength, a proud Australian veteran-owned business who have kitted out home garage gyms and huge fitness centres all over Australia and globally. This week on the Warrior You podcast, Bram Connolly and Lieutenant Colonel Trent Bernard answer your key questions around leadership. In this episode, Trent and Bram discuss the perception of leadership within a team, unpacking your leadership narrative, and share some examples of good leadership that they have witnessed throughout their careers. Trent and Bram, with their years of experience leading in the Army, bring perspective and experience to this conversation as they answer your leadership questions.
And I'm going to answer some leadership questions. Done a few podcasts the last few weeks. Did a podcast with Graham Corns, and it was like a three-part series, and they put it on the radio in Adelaide, and that was pretty cool. And he was a Vietnam veteran, actually, Graham Corns, so he asked me a lot of questions around combat and leadership and the like, and that was it was good. It was like one warrior talking to another. How do I lead people who don't want to listen? That was a great question, I thought. So how do you lead people who don't want to listen? It speaks volumes about yourself as a leader as well if people aren't listening to you. Let's just get it out there. There are some people who are never going to be happy with you or your leadership style, or you as a leader in that position. And as such, you know, there's going to be times when people push back on you, and that's just life. But I think that, you know, leadership is a journey. And that journey starts at the point where, right at the point where you first meet that person. And the influence that you want to have over that person in a leadership capacity over time, it takes effort and it takes time to build that relationship, to build that personal relationship. So if someone doesn't want to listen to you and they're a subordinate, and let's just get that term out in the open, subordinate, because that's what a leadership subordinate relationship is. If you're not leading through, you know, some sort of authority, in which case they have to do what you say anyhow, especially in the military, you've got the Defence Force Disciplinary Act or some such. Same in the police and fire brigade and the ambulance. So, you know, you've still, and most places have human resources rules, so there is some authority when you're in a position. But if someone's not listening to you, then sometimes that can be because you're a knob, right? You haven't built that relationship. Or if you're deeply looking within yourself, maybe you can go, well, hang on a second. Perhaps it is me. Perhaps it's my fault that they're not listening. And if it's not your fault, if you've reflected and it isn't actually your fault, it's not your fault for why they're not listening, it's no longer a leadership issue. It's a disciplinary issue over time, recording it in a diary, using the company's values to talk to that person to get them either out of the company or to start to toe the line. So, yeah, hopefully that answers that question. Oh, the integrated warrior. Could you talk to leadership in a relationship where trust is perceived to have been breached? Brilliant. Okay. The question was asked of me the other day. Is it more important to have trust or respect? And my answer to that was, it's more important to have trust than respect, because once you've broken someone's trust, it's very difficult to win it back, and maybe impossible in some situations. Whereas with respect, you can lose people's respect and then win it back by doing things in the future to show amends, to show that you're working hard towards the group's goals and purpose. Trust is really, really difficult. Once trust has been breached, you know, this is what I'm finding Australians are really bad at. We are really bad at having those conversations. Those conversations where, you know, they're seen to be difficult conversations, confrontational conversations. And because we're scared to have them as an Australian culture, then what quite often happens is we don't ever get that trust back, because we don't sit down with someone and say, hey, look, this is happening, I'm sorry, and this is the steps I'm going to take to change that. So it is one of those cultural things from our very hierarchical society of capitalists who are all out to be self-serving, where if we're going to be seen to be taking a step back and have egg in our face, then we won't do it. And so we would rather lose relationships and lose a position of trust as a leader than to actually develop more trust. So, yeah, anyway, long story short, trust, respect. This one, trust, if you lose it, you're not going to get it back. Respect, you can lose someone's respect, but you can often win that back. The trust piece will require you to sit down, that whole extreme ownership that Jocko talks about, actually sit down and say to someone, hey, this is on me, I stuffed up. The respect thing, just got to walk the walk, show people the standard that you walk past is the standard you accept. All right, what else we got? Dean Wheeler, I think leadership requires respect to be given by both parties and to never ask someone to perform a task you wouldn't do yourself. I agree. Have I asked people to do things that I wouldn't have done myself? I probably have, because I couldn't do them, because I surround myself with people who are generally better than me. So it's an interesting aspect as well. Dean Parkinson mentioned you in his podcast on Life on the Line that you pulled some strings to get him a crack at selection aid 37. Don't know if you caught it. Yeah, look, the only strings that I pulled was the fact that I was the officer in charge of selection course, and put his paperwork through. So I didn't actually pull any strings. I think the cutoff for selection is 52. He might be having a little bit more of a fuzzier brain moment. but you know what? He got there on his own merit. He did a brilliant job. He was one of the older ones. I've got a good story though about a selection, pre-selection. So we were running the special forces entry test. He failed the 3.2 kilometer run with webbing and rifle, and he failed it by seconds, like 1 or 2 seconds. It was really, you know, it would be our own moral compass to look at the time and go, oh, we should just give him those couple of seconds, but you can't, can you? It's black and white. So, and he came up afterwards and he said, oh, look, I've been feeling really crook. Usually I can destroy that run. I just need some time to rest. Can I have another go at it? And generally we wouldn't give people another go at it, except that we were going to be there at the location we were at, which is at Singleton at the time. We were going to be there the next morning anyway for another group of people to do it. And so I remember I said, yeah, okay, well, it was only a couple of seconds. Come back and have a crack tomorrow. And I turned to my CSM and asked him what he thought, and he said, there's no way that guy's going to pass. You know, if he couldn't pass now, when's he going to pass tomorrow? Anyway, he came back the next day beat it by 30, 40 seconds. And so it just goes to prove, you know, that, you know, take everything at face value, but have a think about it too, and just be a good person as a leader. if you've got the authority or if you've got the ability to give someone else a crack at something and they have a reasonable mitigating circumstance for why that perhaps didn't pass, you know, it's no extra effort on my behalf for him to rock up the next day and have another go at it. And that guy went on to have a great career in 2nd Commando Regiment. Yeah. What other questions we got? This one was from Tom. How do you deal with someone or a group of people that are perceived to be in a higher rank than you in job title, age, blah, blah, blah? You know, when I first saw that question, Tom, if you're listening, or if you listen to the podcast that this gets turned into, when I first heard that or read that question, I thought to myself a little bit about imposter syndrome and how quite often we get to a position in our life and we look around us and we say, oh, I can't mix it with these people, with these girls and guys, you know, they're so much better than I am. And what's the perception that they have of you and what's your perception of them? Sometimes those things don't actually line up. You know, it's very difficult for us to really understand how we're seen by other people. The person that you see in the mirror isn't necessarily the person that everyone else sees. So I think it's really important to ask groups of people, you know, how do you perceive me? So that first of all, you can have a well-balanced sort of idea around how people perceive you. And secondly, your perception of them, you know, how do you deal with someone or a group of people that are perceived to be in a higher rank than you in job title and age and etc.? You know, your perception of them, that's your problem. That's absolutely your problem. That's work that you have to do yourself, you know. And there's a great saying, it's none of my business what someone else thinks of me. I mean, God, I wouldn't be able to go live in front of you all now if I gave a crap what you thought about who I am. Yeah, so I might ask Trent about that, actually. I've got him coming on now. Here we go. How do you deal with someone or a group of people that are perceived to be in a higher, you know, rank than you, i.e. job title, age, etc.? This isn't from a military person. This is just someone saying. Some context to that is that perhaps there's a little bit of imposter syndrome going on there from that person, and also you don't know how someone else perceives you, and it's none of your business, really. You know, your perceptions of them might be completely wrong as well. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting question.
Look, I don't think there's a simple answer to be great to actually hear the question, hear the question live to make sure that we're understanding it correctly. But I think, you know, if it's a hierarchical position, so the junior thinks that they're better. Is maybe. That's it?
Oh yeah, I'm not really sure. I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had that. I've had that in a platoon where someone's like, and I mean, I've been that guy. I've been that guy that thinks they're better than their platoon commander. And, you know, and not justified. If you look at all my reports, all of my PARs from the 20 years I was in the military, they all have one theme. And that theme is that I do not mind telling people how I think business should be done, regardless of whether I was in the conversations or not. But that's that's my weakness.
I think I was told as a digger to stop gobbing off every other day, to be fair. Yeah. The more senior you go up through the hierarchy, my experience is that in most instances you actually know less about the detail around other people's jobs. So the higher up the hierarchy you go, you end up leading disparate teams that maybe have different capabilities, and not all of those capabilities you're going to understand completely. So that was certainly my experience, where I might know components of that organization really well, but not the entire organization. So sure, you know, some people are going to know more. It doesn't necessarily mean that they need to tell you that they know more than you. You just accept advice like any good leader.
Yeah. It's a fair point. I was pretty much the same. Another awesome question. How do you deal with inconsistent performance with team members and laziness? How do you deal with inconsistent performance with team members and laziness? You know what? I'm going to get you have a crack at it, and then I'm going to cut loose on this question.
Yeah, so inconsistency and laziness. So that's someone that's not motivated straight off the bat. They're not fully invested in the mission. I think that the team member may in fact think that they know better, know more, don't like you, aren't a fan of you as a leader. That happens from time to time. I certainly think maintaining that mission focus and going back through the why is important. In a military context, obviously there's other avenues that aren't necessarily open to a civilian leader, but there's always performance counselling in any organisation, and you certainly be having a values-based conversation even in a civilian environment.
Yeah, and I want to take it another step further and say, you know, because the person said team members, so inconsistent and laziness across team members, and what we're seeming to forget here from a leadership perspective is if you're a leader, the day-to-day minutiae of leadership is management, really. But to get people to not be lazy, to get people to be motivated, means that they have to have bought into the overall vision and glide path that you're taking that team on as a mission. They have to buy into why they're there, and it's around influence, purpose, and motivation. And if your team members are lazy, and if your team members, you know, aren't putting in the effort, it's because you as a leader haven't crystallized a vision for them to work on, and you haven't appealed to them and their specific strengths and made them want to come to work and go on that vision, that mission, that path with you for a definition of done, of something that's going to be amazing down here. I don't see anyone being lazy when they're doing something they want to do. And remember, leadership is getting someone to do what you want them to do because they want to do it. So some of this has to be self-reflection. The reason they're lazy, the reason they're not motivated, is because you're not putting the effort in, perhaps, as a leader. Some people are just bloody lazy. I get it. But you're not putting the effort in as a leader to bring them with you. If you're talking multiples, it's very strange to have multiple people in a team who are lazy and unmotivated. That's a reflection on the leader, in my humble opinion.
Oh, I agree with that. If you get the one-offs or one and two in a large organisation, sure, that might be a reflection on the individual. But if you've got a whole organisation that's just not motivated at all, there's got to be something around your leadership, your processes, your procedures, your junior leaders. Absolutely, you'd be doing a period of reflection for sure if you're getting that across the organisation. But you know, sometimes you're going to get someone who literally just wants to turn up to work, punch that clock, and go home, do their job, and go home, and is not especially motivated. I'm not saying that they're lost causes, but if they're inconsistent, they're not invested. That's certainly true.
Yeah. Yeah. How would you handle new people coming into your agency who are overly confident, have a know-it-all attitude when you are not a leader?
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
How would you handle new people coming into your agency who are overly confident, have a know-it-all attitude when you are not the leader. So they're a team member who, it's basically storming, forming, conforming, norming, whatever it is.
I think there's always going to be that period initially where a team is starting to form and norm. When someone is coming into a group, I think there's an expectation that they need to conform with a clique, with a group, and that's not always not always true. They may have been hired for different reasons. They potentially have completely different talents, and they're a different personality, which might have been a deliberate ploy to mix up a team on, you know, during that recruitment process. They may very well have been selected for a reason that you're not tracking.
Yeah.
That said, I think it's on both of the individuals to at least have a conversation, get to know each other. There might be a reason why this person's particularly confident and seems know-it-all, but that can be masking anxiety. It can be masking a whole range of, you know, that imposter syndrome. There can be a reason why people do that. So just getting to know them is half the battle.
I know the guy that asked that question. So, and because I know the guy that asked the question, this might be a little bit difficult for him to hear this, but sometimes these things are more about you than what they are about the other person, more often than not. And the person that asked this question doesn't suffer fools, right? And so because of that, it can be difficult to just let someone find their place, and that place might settle and be below you in time. But don't take it on yourself to be the one to bust this person's balls, for use of a better term. Like, just let them find their natural settling place in the team. You don't have to be the one to make that happen. Sometimes it's best just to be that person that just sits at the back and lets it all take its course. Every person needs to be valued and needed as part of a team, giving them a suitable task at their level, and thus will give them ownership of a part of the overall plan. Just my two cents. Yeah, look, that's true too. Garth's right on the money with that. You know, that does happen when people come into a new team. They start flat spinning and trying to show they're good at everything when maybe they're not, just because they want to be part of that leader's vision. It really, and this is the other thing, talking about the person that asked this question. They're in a job where they perhaps are not getting the greatest of leadership. And really good junior leaders and junior officers, when they get a new person in, should give them the left and right of arc that they can operate within. I know I certainly do it when I get new people, you know, to sort of suss them out, work out where they're going, where they're gonna sit. So that is a great point.
It's interesting to see how often that doesn't happen as well. You know, an induction into an organization is simply not enough, and that's not enough to give, you know this is where the photocopier is. This is where the those sorts of transactional type introductions to an organization is just not enough, and many organizations miss it. And it certainly has been the same for me. And even the military doesn't do it perfectly all the time. You know, we do focus on providing guidance, initially, and then throughout each year or each posting or whatever. But we can always do that better, right?
Yeah, I do think that onboarding people is a really important important skill. And you know, we talk about leaders doing leadership functions and management functions. Some of the management requirement is, this is how everything works. You remember the scene out of A Few Good Men? Show me in the rule book where it says where you go to, you know, where you go to the mess hall. Well, there isn't anything in there. Well, of course there isn't, because someone showed you that. You know,
we've spoken previously about leadership narratives and leadership philosophy, and in the military, you know, it's command philosophy, which is specific to an organization, and possibly you know, some leaders and some organizations could use their leaders to go through and think about their own leadership narratives and think about their leadership philosophies and how it applies in an organization, because that gives their team members guidance. It gives them their left and right of arc, for want of a better term.
Yeah. That leadership narrative, how would you describe that as a skill for someone to go and discover for themselves, their actual narrative?
Yeah, so obviously when thinking about your leadership narrative, that's an internal thing. That's what makes up, that's your source code. And we've spoken on Hindsight, you know, Warrior U Hindsight previously about source code DNA, your leadership DNA. It's what makes you tick. It's the reason why you have the values and the beliefs that you've got at that particular point in time. And actually going through that process and reflecting on why you think the way you do about leadership, not necessarily applied to that organization. That's important to actually write down because, you know, thoughts are crystallized through conversation and writing. You know, otherwise they're just a jumbled mess quite often. You know, your leadership philosophy is where you apply that leadership narrative to that particular organization. So this is how my internal beliefs, my leadership source code is then applied in this particular organization. I expect this. You can expect this from me. Those are the sorts of things that are externally delivered.
Yeah, good. I love it. This is a really interesting question. How do you keep going as a leader when you yourself feel like there is no hope?
I just had this conversation last week.
Context. Context too. Like, let's have some context around that because, you know, that might mean you don't buy into whatever it is that your senior management or your hierarchy are telling you to do. So how do you keep going as a leader?
Or that you feel that a change management process feels futile or feels already done.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. We're always talking about leaders providing a vision, a purpose, a why for themselves and their organization, their team. But when you don't believe in the why above you, that can be difficult. But all good leaders are great followers, right? And you might not be invested in it, but if we're to be a truly good or great leader, you know, we may not be seeing all the picture. It may not have been communicated as well as it could have been. So it can be challenging. It can be difficult. A change, for instance, might be doomed to failure, but it shouldn't be because of your part in that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. What's the next question I've got here? Toughest decision made when you were downrange in Afghanistan, I guess from a leadership perspective. You know what? The toughest decision for me from a leadership perspective was probably when I had to leave a team behind to go on a mission, and the team that I left behind was one of my main teams, and so leaving someone out of a mission was probably one of the hardest decisions that I had to make, and it was my senior team team commander, and then that day was Zabat Kalay, so him and his team didn't actually partake in that battle, which, you know, sucks because he's such a great guy and I just don't have that in common with him, I guess, now. And I could have used his bloody horsepower on the day because he's, you know, his team was my number one team. It was team one.
What was the context that led you to make that decision then? Because that's obviously difficult and it's sitting there, you know, after all these years. What is the context behind that?
So four helicopters could only take three commando teams plus snipers plus engineers. The Afghan partner force had to leave five guys behind. His team had been doing a lot of the heavy lifting for the weeks leading up to that. And I just thought it was time for him to have a rest. He wasn't particularly happy about it. And history would show that, you know, it sort of crappy decision. You know, I could have actually used that team on the day because they were probably the best of the four teams as well. Although the guys did an amazing job. But
what was your alternative? Swap another team out?
Oh, I could have left another team behind, I guess. But actually what it was I took my mortar team, who don't usually do much of the door-kicking stuff, and so I thought I'll give them a run. And, you know, that team had a Medal of Gallantry, or at least distinguish. Yeah. Anyway, a whole heap of awards came out of it for that team.
Yeah, right. But, so, I mean, that's about developing your team.
Yeah, I mean, we asked what was the hardest decision, not whether the decision was right or not. I mean, the decision was obviously right. It just was a crappy decision to have to make on the day. I've got a really good question here. What's the best example of leadership you've seen from an officer? There's a certain one-star kicking around the place now over here in Perth, who, when he was the OC of the Tactical Assault Group, he reversed his station wagon company car into a pole after, you know, I think charging someone a few weeks prior for doing something similar, not having a guide. And one of the things you have to do with all of those tag vehicles back in the day was to have a guide to guide you back. And he didn't. And so, you know, he filled out the paperwork. I'm pretty sure he paid the repairs and everything out of his own wallet. Yeah, and it's just one of those things where that rumor went around faster than the rumor of him reversing the car. Yeah, so I think that was probably one of the best decisions I've seen from an officer, just from that perspective. Also, the next SOCOST, you know, I saw him. I was fortunate enough to work with him in Afghanistan when he was the commanding officer. I won't go into too many details about this, but I saw him make some very good strategic decisions that I think others probably wouldn't have made, which had a direct result. No, I won't go into it. But yeah, he made some decisions which would have been very difficult to make strategically that had a great outcome on the landscape that was Afghanistan at the time I was there. And one that I saw that was good was when one of the OCs said, "Hey, I'm not taking my guys outside unless you get me protected mobility vehicles. We're not going out and it was almost almost mutinous, I guess, in some ways. We're not going out unless you sort this out." And forced the army to do the right thing.
Yeah, is it mutinous or is it you know, ensuring that the leader's getting the right resources for the mission?
Yeah, mutiny is an interesting one, isn't it? It's a fine line between being mutinous.
That's difficult. Yeah,
it's a fine line between being mutinous and then saying, you know, this is actually the right thing to do to the senior sirs, you know, or ma'ams or whoever's in charge. Like, no, I'm not going to do that. So that's a whole podcast in itself. Moral courage,
moral courage and leadership.
Yeah, just because something's legal doesn't make it right.
Yeah, I heard the chief officer of CFS say yesterday actually that you know, fireys are hired for their bravery, and then all of a sudden at some point in their career where they become senior enough, they're chastised for being brave and courageous towards the senior sirs. Mm. You know, they're unlikely, you know, if they're being hired for courage and bravery and physical strength, and sure, that courage changes over time, they're unlikely to change their nature of being courageous and fighting for what's right for their team, you know, as their career goes on. So obviously, you know, this particular soldiers done the same.
Yeah. Someone's asked, Dean Wheeler, the old term fake it till you make it is certainly something that you shouldn't be subscribing to, but do you think there is a small amount of this that sneaks into someone's initial start of a career? You know, that's great. So actually, fake it till you make it is something that I do think people should subscribe to as a leader. You have, because if you lead by the right actions, those actions end up becoming your behaviours and so on and so forth. So talking to Patrizia about this in episode one of this season, the Warrior You podcast, and she talks about how words become worlds and thoughts become things. So we use a throwaway line like, fake it till you make it. But actually what we're saying is, your thoughts become things. I am a leader. I am enough. I am the right person standing in front of these guys and girls. And having that affirmation, that fake it till you make it, words become worlds, thoughts become things, that gives you the confidence to lead. And I think we should all actually subscribe to a little bit of that, of thinking, yeah, I'm good enough. And then being humble enough to take feedback on that actual aspect of your leadership style.
I absolutely agree with that. And I am on your team when it comes to faking it till you make it as well. There's an element of that as a leader. And the reason for that is that rarely are you elevated into a position that you've done that before. So clearly You're not quite sure what you're going into. You're not quite sure what the team's about. You're not quite sure what the role is about. And to be fair, even if you've had some sort of a handover prior to doing it, you get there and you know that's when you find all the skeletons in the closet. Anyway, So I do think that faking it till you make it is important to some extent, because it's about an adaptive mindset.
Yeah.
If you're doing the same thing over and over and you're not faking it, you're actually doing what it is. Then you've probably gone as far as you're going to go on your leadership path, your leadership journey in that particular role.
Yeah.
So, I definitely think there is an element of fake it till you make it. It's being adaptable. It's being flexible.
Yeah.
And you've got to stretch yourself, because no great learnings just came by being comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, it always comes from adversity. It always comes from being outside of your comfort zone.
I'm smiling away here because I'm thinking about being promoted from sergeant to captain. And that happened on a Thursday afternoon just before lunch. So the CO, the commanding officer, took me down. He said, meet me at the officer's mess. And I met him there as a sergeant, and we walked in. And then they took my sergeant rank off me and put 3 pips on me. And then he goes, I'd like to introduce you to the newest captain in the Australian Army, blah, blah, blah. And then he walked away, and then I looked around. Everyone went back to eating. I just stood there by myself going, oh, Jesus, I'm now a captain. What do I do now?
Welcome to the new guy.
Walk over. Hey, dudes. Like, there's a lot of faking it going on for about 6 years until I was promoted to major. I'm still faking it. But, yeah, that is a massive rank change, sergeant to captain, by the way. So there was a lot of trying to work that out on the fly, building the aeroplane while falling off the cliff, so to speak.
I had my own experiences with that as well. So, you've just got to apply what knowledge you do have and apply it to the situation. And before you know it, you'll be testing, adjusting your way through the situation. And your boss will still give you performance feedback if you're not doing it right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fair call. All right, gang. Till next time.
Thanks for listening to the Warrior U podcast. Did you know that our parent company, Hindsight, offers leadership and resilience training as well as workshops? If you would like to know more, please head to www.hindsightleadership.com. If you would like to become a supporter of the podcast, there's a donation tab at the bottom of the main podcast page. All contributions are greatly appreciated and help to keep the show on the road. If you're interested in the Warrior U military preparation course, you can find all the information through the podcast website page. Just click on the training tab. All this information and more can be found at www.podcasts.warrioru.com.au.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.